Up next, some intriguing and controversial news about research in mice aimed at curing diabetes, type 1 diabetes, which is an incurable form of the disease, which strikes so many people worldwide. We've been following the research of a scientist taking a novel approach to curing this disease. Dr. Denise Faustman announced in 2001 that she could cure type 1 diabetes in mice once she was able to stop the immune system from attacking the pancreas, which produces insulin. Then it appeared that the pancreas could regenerate, and she told us on this program in 2001 that she suspected that adult stem cells in the blood helped regenerate the pancreas. She wasn't sure. In 2003, she published a paper saying that perhaps the spleen was the source of those cells. And according to Dr. Faustman, when she injected spleen cells into her diabetic mice, those spleen cells gave rise to new islet cells. But this week, three independent studies in the journal Science both succeeded and failed to replicate Dr. Faustman's work. All the teams successfully cured some of their diabetes in their mice, some of the diabetic mice, showing that the growth, there was growth of new islet cells, but they failed to find any evidence that the injected spleen cells were the reason, that the spleen cells gave rise to new islet cells. This hour, we're going to talk to Dr. Faustman about what these findings mean to her approach, her reaction to it, and we'll talk with a scientist about what it takes to get a therapy that works in mice to clinical trials in humans. So if you'd like to join our discussion, our number is 1-800-989-8255. Dr. Denise Faustman is an associate professor of medicine at Harvard Medical School and director of the Immunobiology Lab at Mass General in Boston. She joins us today by phone from her office there. Welcome back to the program, Dr. Faustman.
Oh, thank you. Good to talk to you, Ira.
Thank you. Let me also introduce Dr. David Nathan, is professor of medicine at Harvard. He's also director of the General Clinical Research Center and director of the Diabetes Center at Mass General, and he joins us today from his office. Welcome to the program, Dr. Nathan.
It's nice to be with you.
Dr. Faustman, did I characterize this thread of your research okay? Did I make any mistakes?
Sure. You have a good memory from 2001.
I went back to our archives, looked back at the transcripts of what you said, and my memory was pretty good about that. tell us the genesis from 2001, 3, and up to today.
Yes. So in 2001, we were doing protocols to try to reverse autoimmunity in these end-stage mice so that we could do islet cell transplants. And you'll remember islet cells are the cells that secrete insulin. And
right.
Clinically, people like David Nathan knew that islet cell transplants were hard to get going or working very well in humans because of this recurrent disease. So our aim in 2001 was to come up with protocols in mice to get rid of the underlying autoimmunity, then do an islet cell transplant, and then see if we could really get normal blood sugars. And that was where we got the first jarring data that the mice taught us about. And that data was there was good news that in these very end-stage mice, we could reverse autoimmunity. We had done the islet transplants. The animals were normal glycemic. And bingo, the big surprise was that when we took the transplant out, the blood sugar stayed flat. And
wow.
That was how could this happen? And sure enough, how it happened was that islets had reappeared in the pancreas. And in 2001, we weren't allowed to use the word regeneration in that paper. It was restoration of insulin secretion. But now we've moved from that point, and in 2003, we were allowed to use the word regeneration and showed that we could not only do it repeatedly in these end-stage animals, but there appeared to be multiple mechanisms for why these islet cells could reappear in the pancreas. And one way was without any stem cell transplant. Another way was actually putting back in precursor cells from the spleen.
Mm-hmm.
So then this week, as you know, as of today, three groups spent the last 3 years trying to do these same cures to diabetic mice, that is, not humans yet. David can talk about that. And show that they, too, could get long-term reversal of end-stage diabetic mice.
But so, they couldn't get the, they didn't agree that it was the spleen cells that were causing it.
Yeah, so there's still debate of how this regeneration / rescue occurs. We know from our experiments that if the animals are a little bit earlier stage diabetic versus very, very end-stage, that the rescue and regeneration is more driven from endogenous cells, whether that's a insulin-secreting cell dividing into another insulin-secreting cell, or your favorite stem cell. There's many of them that have been proposed for the islet, anywhere from duct stem cells to fat stem cells to bone marrow cells. But if the animal's a little bit earlier, you can get, without an injection of stem cells, spontaneous healing of the pancreas. So these groups had protocols that perhaps optimize the spontaneous healing.
So do you still think that there are some, as you say, perhaps unknown stem cells floating around that come back once you take away the insult to the pancreas?
Oh, absolutely.
And regenerate it?
Yes, absolutely. I think there's, I think the pancreas is still smarter than us, and I think that it can probably heal by multiple mechanisms. This week, another paper came out from another group in Switzerland showing that in human fat tissue, they had found a similar precursor cell that in culture could form human islets. So these stem cells may be multiple locations in the exocrine part of the pancreas and fat cells in the bone marrow, as well as if you stop the disease in its tracks, you may also rescue any remaining islet cells there.
David, Nathan, this must be exciting to scientists, but it also must, you know, make you scratch your head and say, how soon or will this ever be transplantable, so to speak, to humans?
Well, it's worth pointing out that Denise's work and the work in Science that's being published this week is all in mice. And so the mouse community has reason to celebrate. And, you know, diabetes is curable in them, but we still need to demonstrate whether these lessons we've learned in the mouse are translatable to humans. I must say, when I saw the three papers that are, to a great extent, confirmatory of the major results that Denise found over the last 4 or 5 years, I was very pleased. I think that the question of mechanism is where these cells come from. It remains an open question, obviously. The three papers could not confirm what Denise had seen. But nevertheless, I mean, there are new islets that are secreting insulin and sufficient to cure diabetes. And I think what we need to keep in mind is that the diabetes in these mice, this mouse model of autoimmune diabetes, was thought to be irreversible, incurable at the stage in which it was being studied.
Now, the mice were fed a cocktail to knock out the immune response. Can that same sort of cocktail be given to people to knock out the immune response?
Well, it needs to be determined. The reason that we've been enthusiastic from the moment that Denise and I started talking about these findings in mice is that it is conceivable that one can use a relatively simple way of manipulating the immune system, at least as the first step, to get rid of the part of the autoimmune response, deplete these kind of cells that don't recognize self from non-self. And that makes, of course, for the ability to do some fairly simple early clinical trials.
Can you do that now, Dr. Nathan?
Well, I mean, so there are some technical reasons why we haven't started it yet. People have wondered, well, this is about 3 years old. How come we haven't started? Right. It turns out that one of the fundamental parts of Denise's studies is that she recognized that there are these abnormal T cells. This is a white cell that circulates in the blood and which seems to be the cell, again, that attacks the islet, that is miseducated in a way, doesn't recognize a friend from foe. So it attacks the friendly islet. And she learned that, you know, she could deplete those cells, and that seems to be the basis of decreasing the autoimmunity. We have to be able to measure those cells in a reliable fashion in humans before we can go on to human studies. And Denise has spent the last couple of years trying to develop these methods and translate them from measuring them in mouse to measuring them in humans. As soon as she's developed that tool, then we can go ahead and do the first part of the clinical studies that we want to do.
Dr. Faustman, you going to go out on a limb for us here?
Well, yes, and there's a great analogy that people with diabetes out there will understand. If David Nathan was in 1920 and he announced over in his research lab down the street here that he had discovered insulin, but he didn't know it regulated blood sugars, the chance of insulin ever working in a human and not being able to check a blood sugar and dose it is about zero. So we feel we're in the same boat, and to really make these compounds work in humans, we have to have a blood monitoring tool, because otherwise we're going to burn through a lot of money really fast. So the big job assignment that comes back to my laboratory here is taking human blood isolating these cells and proving we can count them and quantitate them before David ever starts the trial over in the clinic.
Let's say that this does work, just speculation, and using your mice as an example, how much recovery was there, and was the disease knocked out for good?
Yeah, so those are two separate questions. One is, everyone confirmed that once you knock out the disease in these end-stage mice, it's gone and doesn't appear to reoccur. The studies varied, each one individually as well as our data, somewhat in the percentage of animals cured. And there's a pretty good explanation for at least why one study had a lower cure rate than the other studies. And that's something that we had actually shown in our 2001 study and is pertinent to what David does over in the clinic. And that is that during this cure period where we're injecting a compound over 40 days, one compound and another treatment over 40 days, if blood sugars are not kept under tight control, the percentage of animals cured is totally different. And maybe, David, you want to talk a little bit about tight blood sugar control from your human studies.
Well, there are several different. It's worth pointing out that tight blood sugar control is the way that we have currently of controlling long-term complications. So there have been wonderful long-term clinical trials that show that even if you have diabetes and you're at risk for eyes, kidney disease, nerve problems, heart disease, that by controlling blood glucose levels as close to the non-diabetic range as possible, that you can decrease complications. So that's independent of any autoimmune effect. It appears to work in type 1 diabetes mm-hmm. and type 2 diabetes. However, we've also learned along the way that if you look at people who have an early stage of type 1 diabetes, they've gotten the disease in the last year or so, some of them have enough beta cells, that's the insulin-secreting cell, remaining, that you can actually salvage some of them, at least temporarily. That is that they continue to secrete insulin somewhat longer when you have tight glucose control. On the other hand, if they have glucose control that is not close to the normal range, those remaining beta cells fade away very quickly. So again, it's not as if you can rescue them permanently. I'm not saying that. But tight blood sugar control in human diabetes seems to prolong the survival of those remaining beta cells. So maybe that's what's going on in these experiments in mice. I don't know, but that's one possibility.
We're talking about diabetes this hour and Talk of the Nation Science Friday from NPR News. I'm Ira Flatow talking with Denise Faustman and David Nathan. Of course, when you think about diabetes, you know it's an autoimmune disease. You think about the other autoimmune diseases, you know. Why can't the same kind of research apply to them?
Well, that's actually why probably David and I are excited about bringing this forward to the clinic, because as we were doing mouse experiments, other scientists worldwide were looking at these same bad T cells in other forms of human autoimmunity, and it turns out very similar T cells that die with these same compounds have been found in lupus and scleroderma and indirectly in subsets of patients with Crohn's and rheumatoid arthritis. So there may be subsets of autoimmune patients beyond type 1 diabetes that might benefit from this same therapy. Obviously, in those patients, you don't need to regrow their islets or rescue their islets, but you do need to rescue their target tissues that are being destroyed in different forms of autoimmunity.
Is this a new type of T cell that you discovered, or was this known before?
It's a new way to identify this T cell. Many people have thought that once you had autoimmunity, you had such a big repertoire of bad T cells that you could never find a marker that would identify that large repertoire of cells, let alone specifically eliminate them. And now we identify them by actually eliminating them and proving that they can't transfer disease. So in that way, it's a newly defined broader subset of T cells, not just one bad type of T cell that can kill only one type of islet cell.
So is there any risk of suppressing parts of the immune system that you don't want to suppress with a treatment like this?
Well, that's good news, because in many trials that people have participated in type 1 diabetes, non-specific immunosuppressive drugs have been the hope. And indeed, if you add non-specific immunosuppressive drugs, you can halt the disease or slow it down, but you're also halting the good white blood cells and good T cells. And the compounds we're using appear to only selectively kill the bad T cells. So the most simplistic way to view these compounds is kind of like an antibiotic. You take an antibiotic, and it only kills the bacteria. It doesn't kill your cells. That is, on a good day, you get the right dose of the antibiotic. So these antibiotic-type drugs appear to have specificity for only killing the disease-causing cells, at least in the mice, and in tissue culture in human autoimmune cells.
And it's worth pointing out, I think, that our first step in human studies, which we're not quite ready to start, we'll be looking at whether we can suppress these cells. We never thought, I think, when we designed the very earliest human studies, that they would necessarily cure diabetes. I think that's far down the road. But the first step will be to see whether we can duplicate what Denise has shown in the NOD mouse, at least with regard to depleting these bad actor cells.
Mm-hmm. And so you have to come up with a protocol for doing that.
Well, we have a protocol actually to do that. To do that very first step. But it is the first step in what will probably be a sequence, and maybe a long sequence of studies, before we get to the point of curing anyone of diabetes.
You have to find a way of measuring those cells.
Well, we're working on automating it and making it more practical and more reliable, yes.
Well, I want to thank you and wish you luck, Dr. Faustman. Every time you come back, you have something new and interesting to tell us.
Well, thank you for inviting us.
What is your last step? What's your next step on this? And I've got about a minute left for you to explain.
I guess my last point would be that what we're creating or working on might be applicable to many strategies, because in the human pancreas, we still don't know if this rescue/regeneration that's now been confirmed by many groups is present in the human pancreas. So, indeed, the elimination of autoimmunity might be a benefit to other approaches that are going to use cellular transplants of diverse sources if the human pancreas doesn't have this regenerative potential.
Dr. Faustman, thank you. Denise Faustman, Associate Professor of Medicine at Harvard, and David Nathan, Professor of Medicine at Harvard Med School. Thank you both for taking time to be with us today, and we'll be checking back with you.
Thank you, Ira.
You're welcome.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye. We're going to take a short break and come back and change gears and talk about depression, new studies on treating depression. So don't go away. We'll be right back.